Welcome to episode 5 of Great Lakes Football Talk. Once again, we're joined again by our colleague from the fantasy football fraternity, Willpower, and we have a fantastic show tonight. Before we get started, I just want to congratulate and say good luck to the NCAA March Madness teams, specifically the UB Bulls, Michigan State Spartans, and Arizona State Sun Devils. The tournament kicked off tonight and is expected to bring a lot of excitement and heartbreak throughout. Today's podcast is our bread and butter. We're talking fantasy football, specifically free agency fantasy relevance. First, we'll kick it off with the big name players that have found a new home. Adam, why don't you kick us off?
Well, by far the biggest guy is Le'Veon Bell. I think that's pretty obvious for everybody. You know, he sat out the whole year. By the time he plays football, it'd be about a year and a half, 18, 19 months. And him going to the Jets, I think, is super beneficial for him. He'll be the focal point, even with them trying to help Darnold grow, but he's part of the plan. You know, he's going to probably catch, probably about 60, 70 balls. You know, he'll carry the rock 250-plus times. And honestly, he's probably at the early stages, top five pick of the running back right now.
Yeah, and if I'm drafting right now, I'm probably taking him as my number three back behind Barkley and behind Zeke. We're going before Kamara, before C-Mac, before Gurley. Those three, I don't have in any specific order, but Bell is my number three, possibly could even move up to my number two, depending on when my drafts actually come out and I'm there picking and he's there. When he's on the field and he's shown it with the Steelers, that he's a top player in this league, and there's no doubt about it. We talked last week about it actually broke when he signed, and we had Ed on last week. He's a fan of the Jets, and him being in my division, I'm not happy about it, but I am happy that he's back playing football again, and it's going to be huge for fantasy. So I got him currently number three behind Barkley and Zeke. What are your thoughts on him, Will?
Well, I can't go that high on him. You know, the offense that he was coming from in Pittsburgh was a high-octane offense with a great offensive line as well, and they really played to his strengths. Watching the Jets, I'm not sure they can do that. They had a hard time blocking for anybody last year. So even the great talent that he is, I have him up around 8 or 9. I can't put him in the top 3, 4, or even 5 myself personally.
Yeah, still a first round pick though. I mean, I think that's going to be the consensus right away, is he's going to be a first round guy. I think depending on what they do draft-wise, I think they need to Will is right. They do need to shore up that offensive line a little bit. Hopefully maybe grab a tight end that can do a little bit of blocking. But, yeah, I definitely think if any drafts happen and he falls out of round one, I think it'd be more shocking than anything else, because we do know what he can do when he's on the field.
They kind of dropped the ball, or not really dropped the ball. They kind of missed out on Matt Paradis too, talking about that offensive line. I know he was rumored to be talking to New York. Just bringing up Bell's numbers here, though, he's going to be catching a lot of balls out of the backfield. That's what he's done his whole career, as well as being an efficient runner. But he's giving Sam Darnold going into his second year the true definition of a safety blanket. I mean, when in seasons where he's finished – he's only finished 16 games once, so we'll go to his 16-game season and his 15-game season. He's had over 80 receptions in both of those years. In a full PPR league, that's 80-plus points just in receptions. That's not even counting the yards, the touchdowns, the rushing, anything like that. So to get him down as low as 8 where you have him, Will, I kind of don't agree with that. I mean, if I'm in your league and I'm picking 2, you could almost guarantee you he's gone to me at number 2.
Yeah, same here. I would if I'm picking 3, 4, 5, he's definitely gone before anybody else gets to him. And it's gonna be interesting to see who's gonna actually be his who's gonna be his backup. I mean, I think the Jets end up getting that young guy to pair with Bell to ensure that he plays 16 games, and Bell's gonna be the workhorse. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays a full 16 games that he leads all running backs in touches.
Having off all of last year, he's coming in fresh. I don't think he's going to be rusty. I think he's going to be more fresh than anything. Again, like I said, it's exciting to have him back on the field. I do not like where he's at, but he's one of my favorite players to watch play, so I'm glad that he's back. Let's talk about one of his teammates that actually One of his new teammates now, coming over from Washington, Jameson Crowder, signing with the Jets. Will, what are your thoughts on him going there, joining Robbie Anderson and Quincy Enunwa in that wide receiver set?
You know, I don't really like the signing too much myself personally. They had Quincy Enunwa, who was able to get the job done in the slot. Obviously, you saw last year his numbers went down a little bit when they started running Jermaine Kearse in the slot more. But basically, to me, almost the same player. You know, Crowder slightly a bit more explosive, but he really hasn't proven a ton to us yet. So I don't – I felt like they could have done something a little bit better.
Yeah, I see it. I won't touch any of the wide receivers for the Jets just for some reason is – I'm not a huge believer in Darnold being the type of quarterback that can go feed Bell plus two or three other receivers plus a tight end. So, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't touch him. I mean, I think it's a Crowder help the development of Sam Darnold. You know, basically any receiver will, but I don't see it being beneficial.
Yeah, I agree with you there. From a fantasy standpoint, he's not somebody that I'm necessarily going to be targeting. I'm in a couple deep leagues, one actually with both of yous, and another a couple other deep leagues that I may grab him late, but I'm not grabbing him. He's definitely not going to be one of my two or three main guys, even one of my main flexes, so might stay away from him there. He did get a contract very similar to a player that Buffalo got. John Brown signed for 3 years, $27 million. Crowder went for 3 years, $28.5 million. So it's like, would you really compare those two to each other?
I'm drafting
Brown in basically any league where I feel there's a round comfortable enough for me to take him. Probably before we get to the double-digit rounds, maybe 9, 8, depending on how the board's setting up. But, yeah, 10 out of 10, I would take Brown. I think he's set up with a better quarterback overall. There's not as many mouths to feed. I mean, Shady can catch the ball at the backfield too, but he's not going to catch 60, 70, 80 balls this year like Bell will.
I like the John Brown signing. I know Will's a huge John Brown fan. I don't know how he feels about him with Josh Allen or what his thoughts are on Josh Allen. I guess we could get to that. But there's another wide receiver here that Buffalo signed that I would probably take over John Brown, and that's Cole Beasley. We'll talk about him in a bit. But let's get Will's thoughts on John Brown first.
Well, as you know and as you've mentioned, I'm definitely the strongest John Brown supporter of the group. You know, being an Arizona fan, I cheered for him and I watched him go over 1,000 yards. And he almost hit another one. You know, two seasons of almost 1,000 yards. I know what he can do. Seeing him with Josh Allen makes me a lot happier than seeing him with Joe Flacco, you know. Joe Flacco has a weak deep ball. Josh Allen has a strong deep ball. So I'm looking forward to seeing them connecting quite a bit this year.
Yeah, he brings that big playability, something that we've been looking for here in Buffalo, and something that could give fantasy players maybe something to cheer for. Josh Allen he's going to be one of the more improved quarterbacks this year with the talent that they're building around him. We'll get to that a little bit later after our break, but it's definitely something that I'm excited about. While we're on the topic of Buffalo, let's talk Cole Beasley. He is somebody that I could see myself taking a little earlier. I haven't really projected a round for him yet, but in PPR leagues, him coming across the middle, as long as Allen works on his timing with him, I can definitely see him being a nice PPR add, flex play, even a wide receiver too, depending on how deep the league is. Adam, what do you got on Cole?
My only thing is if they take another receiver in the draft, or even if they double down in the draft, it's going to be kind of messy over there, to be honest. That's something it's something I have to watch in spring, not spring training, but in camp, just for some reason, is with Zay Jones still being there. You have Foster, you know, now you have they're going to end up drafting a tight end as well, and this tight end class is loaded. Whatever tight end you pick, you have to put him in your offense. So it might be to the point, can Josh Allen feed all of these mouths? I mean, you know, I'm looking up at stuff right now, just wondering about how many teams actually had three 1,000-yard receivers in the same season, and I'm looking at six right now. Oh, five. And the last ones to do it were the Arizona Cardinals in 2008 with Larry Fitzgerald, Anquan Boldin, and Steve Breaston. I mean, it's when you get more than – it's always good to have numerous guys that could step in and play well. The thing is, though, when they're all healthy, who do you feed? I mean, Cole Beasley is going to be the slot guy, but if they go and draft a DK Metcalf, and then, or even like a TJ Hockenson in the first round, they're going to have to feed your first round guy too. And it's going to get kind of a messy because Zay Jones has potential. You know, Foster shown that he could probably end up being a number three guy. So it's going to get a little bit messy there. I mean, that's why I'm glad that I don't draft until August.
Does it seem like one of those situations where well, you're not a Buffalo fan, but as somebody that's a Buffalo fan should be more excited about the actual team, but as a fantasy person, probably stay away from?
Yeah, I could see. I mean, me, I always have to at least take one of my Lions guys. So what I do is I figure out who'd be most beneficial for me as a team. But, yeah, that's how I think Buffalo's going to be. I mean, say, for instance, you want to snag Josh Allen and then take one of the receivers. Basically, you just have to look at the top, you know, the depth chart right before you draft and then pick one of the top three guys, and that would be basically it. I mean, it's good, though. Our teams are good on paper as of now with some holes to still fill, which I'm sure is going to be done in the next coming weeks when April gets here and the draft is here. But, yeah, the fantasy is it's difficult, though, unless you – are an elite quarterback, which we don't know about Josh Allen yet just because it's his second year. It might be better to watch the guys and root for them than actually draft them, unless it's a free league. If you're doing a free fun league with your buddies or something, then I say, yeah, you go and maybe take like two of them just because there's huge potential there. But if you're playing for money, snag your favorite receiver.
Let's get Will's thoughts on Cole Beasley before we get into the next guy. Will?
You know, personally, I've never been a big Cole Beasley fan. You know, there was a bunch of hype on him last year going into the beginning of the year with Dallas, you know, since they didn't have any strong candidate receivers last year. But I've just never been a Cole Beasley guy. Seems like he gets injured a fair amount. He can't work the slot, and that can be useful to Allen. I don't know if that's quite his forte, but I'm going to avoid him. Myself, I don't really I like players that have a little bit more high risk, high reward type players like a John Brown. I know one play can make your whole fantasy weekend. Whereas Cole Beasley, I don't know what I'm going to get there. You know, the one thing is I don't mean to put you down here and your team, but I think the Bills are going to be playing.
And let's just say this, though.
So there's always going to be an opportunity.
Well, I mean, you're not completely wrong. We have improved, but it all comes down to chemistry and them building together. Our defense pretty much stayed intact. We did build or we did grab Kevin Johnson from Houston to kind of shore up the secondary. And you could see that they're obviously making moves on the offensive side of the ball, but just signing a bunch of names doesn't necessarily mean success. So, recent history has shown that we're really not good at closing games or we do get behind and we still have New England in our division. So I could definitely, until we show it on the field, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you about playing from behind, but I think this is I'm very optimistic about this year. Adam, what were you going to say?
Beasley did have a lot of hype on him last year, a ton. The thing is, though, if everybody realized he's a 5'8" receiver, what are you going to get there? He ain't going to win you the 50-50 ball. I mean, you shouldn't – like, nobody should expect probably top 20 numbers from a 5'8" receiver, even if he is the focal point, because 99% of these corners and safeties are all a lot bigger than him. So it's – if you're running, you know – slant routes and stuff, and you're only getting a little bit of like garbage yards here and there, it's difficult. I mean, because a 5'8" receiver ain't going to break, you know, he ain't going to be catching Hail Marys. He's not going to catch, you know, that 60-yard deep ball or whatever. So, I mean, me, I drafted him, I think, in one league. He fell maybe 13 to me, round 13, I think. And I took him just because I was comfortable that he could live up to the value that I was getting for him. But there were some other leagues where I seen him go 6, 7, 8, and I wasn't touching him then.
It remains to be seen what happens. I think a lot of us here in Buffalo are getting just hyped because we are out there signing guys and spending money, but we're not overspending money. So we'll see what happens. Let's go down to a guy that actually used to be a Lion and was with Philly last year, and now he's with the Giants. Kind of, I don't want to say he's taken over Odell's position, but obviously Odell's not there anymore. Golden Tate comes in. Eli, as of right now, until the draft happens, is still under center. Who knows what's going to happen there? But where do we see? What do we got for Golden Tate, Adam?
Me being a Lions fan, I mean, when he has a quarterback that knows how to use him, he's dangerous. I mean, you even see a little bit when he was Russell Wilson in Seattle. Eli, I think, is going to end up outside of Barkley. I think Eli's going to make Golden Tate a focal point of that offense just because I think he's more talented than Sterling Shepard. It seems like he's never really knew Eli. He's really never knew how to use Evan Engram, I think, as well as he should be able to use him. I mean, Engram is a big receiver, has good hands. But it seems like he doesn't give him enough attention. So I expect from what we've seen so far, I expect that to happen again. I think he'll look at Engram when he's open, but when it comes to forcing the ball or whatever, I think it's going to be Golden Tate. And even if it's not Eli, I mean, you get Dwayne Haskins in there, somehow Kyler Murray. Golden Tate's a wonderful security blanket. We've seen it in Detroit here where the bubble screens that were getting thrown behind the line were going for, you know, first downs, 20 yards, 30 yards, a couple really super short throws that are maybe like a 5, 6 yards when he actually caught the ball, end up getting turned into huge touchdowns that really, really helped us in some big games. And I think there's going to be a rookie quarterback there sometime throughout the season. I think Eli starts a year, but he's going to end up – I think he's – outside of Barkley, he's the guy to own in New England or New York.
My opinion on him kind of goes back to what Will said about Buffalo's offense. It's the same as New York's offense. They're going to be behind a lot, so they are going to need to throw it. So that could definitely help him out there. I'm still waiting on Engram to break out as well. And then they also – Sterling Shepard, I think he does work better out of the slot. As of right now, he is kind of forced on the outside because of trading Odell away. And we don't know what we're going to get with Tate. But I would definitely take a flyer on Tate. They just got to get him the ball. He's shown that once he has the ball in his hands, he can make things happen. He has three – over 1,000-yard receiving years in his career. He's got four 90-plus-yard receptions 90-plus receptions in a season. So he's definitely got what you want in, like, a PPR player. He hasn't missed many games, it doesn't look like. I mean, he's had a handful here and a handful there, but nothing major, three seasons of 16 games started and games played. So he's definitely somebody that I would take a flyer on. He'd probably be another wide receiver too for me. I wouldn't take him as my first guy just because of who his quarterback is. I mean, you're either getting a rookie or you're getting Eli. So it's kind of hard to say, but it sounds like we got Will back. So what do you got on Golden Tate, Will?
You know, like I said, slot receiver, and Shepard is a slot guy as well. I'm more interested in whoever's going to be running the outside of that offense. You got basically three players that are going to be doing the same thing: Shepard, Tate, and then Engram. You know, Shepard to me is not really, he's never really proven he can be a good outside receiver. So I'm interested to see how it's all going to work out. I would definitely pick up Tate before Shepard. I just don't know what round. And, you know, like I said, the rounds that I might find them in,
yeah,
I'm probably going to go with somebody else.
Like I said, I'll take a flyer on them. I don't know. He's definitely not going to be my number one. I know we're actually in the middle of a slow draft now, and essentially with the keepers and the round that we're in, he essentially went round 8 or 9, you can call it, because we each get 4 keepers, and I think we're about 4 rounds in, and he just went a couple picks ago. So, yeah, so essentially went round 8, if you want to think about it like that. So that's probably where he would go in redraft leagues. So, I mean, if he's there, 8, 9, even 10, I'll definitely take him. Nothing earlier than that.
I was going to say, you know, somebody, if I was looking at Chris Godwin
or Golden Tate,
I'm going to take Godwin all day.
I think he's going to have a good year. We're actually going to mention him a little bit later on in our next segment. But, yeah, Godwin over Tate is definitely – I definitely agree with that. So last year we saw Eric Ebron go from one team to the Colts and kind of break out. This year we have Devin Funchess going from one team to the Colts. How do you think Devin Funchess is going to do with the Colts, Adam?
I think it's gonna help him playing with Andrew Luck. You know, Andrew Luck and Cam Newton, they're both very good quarterbacks. But I think Luck he's more skilled at getting the best out of his receivers than what Cam Newton is. We've seen him do it with Ebron, who basically put up stinkers in Detroit. I mean, other than I think he had one decent year, the rest were nothing like we thought he was gonna do. And then his first year here, Ebron has, 12 touchdowns. One of them, I think, was a rushing one, put up a bunch of yards. And Funchess is a guy I'm going to not put a lot of faith in. Like, I'm not gonna touch him until the double-digit rounds. But I'll play him, though. I mean, I'll draft him, throw him in the flex based up on the matchup, and reap the benefits later. I mean, maybe use him as a trading piece if needed, if he really starts clicking. It's a one-year deal, so he wants to prove himself.
Yeah, and his contract makes it basically a prove it contract. He's making $10 million with up to $13 million in incentives for this 1 year, and he's a big body. The only reason that I probably would not draft him is because of the fact that he will be overdrafted. People are going to see what Luck did with Ebron last year, and they're going to take a look at Funchess, see him available, and take him. So I'm not going to be reaching for him, but I would be more than happy to have him. He's a guy I've liked him his whole career in Carolina. I've always been rooting for him, not really because of where he went to college. I think he went to Michigan, so I wasn't really a big on him in college. I'm not a huge college guy, but when he got to the league, he was somebody that I was rooting for. I actually wanted him here in Buffalo this year as a free agent. Obviously we didn't go that way, but I'm definitely going to be targeting him, but I'm not going to be grabbing him as early as I think he will go. But yeah, I'm excited to see what he's going to do this year. It sounds like Will's back again. Will, what do you got on Funchess?
Like I was going to say, I expect big things from Funchess. I think playing with Andrew Luck will make anyone look better. I think Funchess is a pretty good receiver. He's a tall, big-bodied receiver, so I expect end-zone targets from him, similar to Ebron. You know, I think he's going to thrive in this offense much more than he was doing in Carolina.
Like I said, I'm excited to see what happens with him there. He's definitely a guy he's going to be on my radar. Well, let's move on. We have so now Funchess is with the Colts. We have a former Colt, even though he wasn't with them last year. He's with the Jags last year, but now Dante Moncrief is now with the Steelers. Obviously, AB got traded out of there to Oakland. James Washington, rookie from last year, is making his way up the depth chart, but they went out and they grabbed Dante Moncrief. Could we see a resurgence from him this year with Big Ben? Adam?
I don't see it. I think even though they did sign him and possibly told him, look, as of now, you'll be one of the main guys, I think he'll get lost after draft time. I mean, Juju's there, and he, you know, nobody, even a guy that comes in the draft, no one's going to overtake that spot from Juju being the number one guy this year or for the foreseeable future. They took James Washington out of Oklahoma State last year. And he's very talented. He had some minor moments this year, with Pittsburgh. And I think next year is going to be a huge step in his development, because with you feeding, you know, with Big Ben feeding Juju and Antonio Brown, they both were so good last year. And we know Brown demands, you know, his fair share of targets. So it kind of took away from Washington's overall production. But I think this year it opens up for him. I do think Pittsburgh takes another wide receiver fairly early, which that receiver will be the guy to bump Moncrief off. You know, in my mock draft I'm currently doing, I actually have Pittsburgh trading up pretty early to take DK Metcalf. And I think if something like that, which I think is very, very strong, that you know, there's a very strong chance that could happen. I see Moncrief as a waiver wire pickup once one of them get hurt, maybe. But if there's not injuries, I don't think he's going to hold very much value this year.
I think it's Washington's job to lose out there, aside from the number one Juju, of course. You know, Washington had his chances last year, but had a few injuries and also had some drops and some big moments. So if you look at the way Dante Moncrief finished the season last year, he really came on. And I think he's going to push Washington for that spot. I agree with Adam. I think the Steelers do try to get another wide receiver to add to the core, but I can see Moncrief playing a good role.
So I do not agree with both of you as far as Pittsburgh grabbing a wide receiver, especially early. I think they need to go defense. Obviously, they did lose Bell and they did lose AB, but they have, as mentioned, Juju, and they do have James Conner, and they have Jalen Samuels, and they have James Washington. Now they got Moncrief. So I don't think they necessarily need to go wide receiver. Will they grab one just because the wide receiver class is so deep? Probably. So, I mean, I could see them grabbing one there. So I would count on Moncrief being the number three, fringe number two in Pittsburgh when the season starts. I think his expectations from me are basically the same as what I mentioned about Jamison Crowder, though. They're probably going to be around. They're probably going to go around each other in the in fantasy drafts. He's just going to just come in. He's not going to be really too fantasy relevant. Maybe be like a bye week pickup or somebody in a really deep roster, or yeah, really deep roster. But he's another receiver I'm probably not touching. He's been kind of overshadowed by Hilton for most of his career, and now he comes in and he's going to be overshadowed by Juju. So he's just basically your complimentary number two, number three kind of guy. He's got Big Ben throwing him the ball, so maybe there's something there, but I'm probably not taking a chance on him.
Like we were talking about earlier, if I was going to take a flyer on Crowder or Moncrief, it's going to be the guy in the big offense of the Pittsburgh Steelers who can catch touchdown passes and catch the long ball. I would take my flyer on Dante Moncrief over Crowder.
For me, it's kind of just like throwing names in a hat and grabbing one out. I think you're probably going to get the same production out of both. Today we had a new signing by the Cowboys, Randall Cobb. I don't know if anybody really looked into that, cause it just happened actually a few hours ago. Anybody got any word on Cobb, where they think he's going to finish, how he's going to do this year?
I mean, health has been a big problem of his for the last couple of years, which is why he kind of flamed out in Green Bay. But if he can stay on the field, though, I'd take him. I mean, it'd be late, and I mean very late. It'd probably be one of the last couple rounds. Just for some reason, is Dak Prescott didn't know how to really use none of his receivers outside of Amari Cooper. I mean, the reason why their record was so bad before Cooper got into the fold is because Dak couldn't get any. He couldn't use any of the talent around him. So I don't know if that was just maybe Beasley isn't as talented as some people thought. Maybe Michael Gallup wasn't as talented as we thought. Maybe Alan Hearns wasn't as good as we thought, but it wasn't clicking, you know, until Amari Cooper came there. So, I mean, if I'm in one of my last couple rounds, if I don't take him and he's there on the wire, maybe wait a week or two just to see how his role fits in over there. I think he's going to take over Beasley's spot in the slot. But for me, I might actually, you know, I might prefer to actually wait until the season starts and then just pick him up off the wire.
Yeah. Will, you got anything on Randall Cobb?
I've always liked Randall Cobb. You know, the biggest thing for me is comes down to health. We've seen what he can do with Aaron Rodgers. Of course, that's Aaron Rodgers. But when he's healthy, he plays big. And he can make big splash plays. You know, he can catch the ball in the middle and he can outrun people. He's pretty good at the yards after catch. So it's all about staying healthy for him. You know, he's a good piece. I think he feels right in there. What Beasley left.
Yeah, the health, you know, is going to be about the biggest being factor, able to stay on the field, obviously. They went out and they grabbed Amari Cooper last year. We got to remember that Jason Witten is coming back. Is he going to be his old self? Who knows? But he's going to be taking some targets away. Zeke is a good ball catcher out of the backfield. Michael Gallup entering his second year. We could see something from him. But Cobb, I think he's going to be – he could be a good middle-to-road wide receiver. The thing that I think that kind of scares me the most is – and I don't necessarily hate Dak Prescott as a fantasy quarterback, but he's not really a good fantasy quarterback. He's pretty, 23, 22, and 22 are his touchdown totals. So it's like, and he's kind of got to spread that around between 5-6 different consistent receivers this year, between the Wittens and the Zekes and the Gallups and the Coopers now. So it's like, so how, just like you said about the Bills, how are you going to spread the ball around and have Cobb be fantasy relevant? I mean, could he help them as Cowboys fans and help them win? Yeah, but fantasy relevant? Who knows, you know?
Yeah, and plus, if you – go ahead, Will.
I was just going to agree with what you said earlier. That's, you know, either last pick of your draft or something, or wait and see how that pans out. Maybe a waiver wire week one or two if we see some good things from him.
Yeah.
And if you look, I mean, he's going to his fourth year. I mean, he's never hit over 4,000 yards passing yet. You know, he's had 22, 22, and 23 for touchdowns. I mean, you have to expect they brought Witten back for a reason. They want him to be a security blanket for Dak. Cooper's the main guy guaranteed. He's the undoubted number one. And it's – I don't know. With Zeke there, I mean, outside of Cooper and Zeke, I mean, I wouldn't really probably touch any of them. You know, Witten, he's going to have some restrictions on his play time. I forgot what to say, his contract. I guess where he's not going to be on the field for every play. I mean, he's going to be on, you know, in reduced snap situation. And I don't even like Dak as a quarterback. I mean, I pick him up if I have an injury. Or if I decide to do one of my things where I only draft one quarterback, and when it's time for my quarterback to be on the bye, I'll pick up Dak. But, I mean, if you look, though, the guy barely throws for over 200 yards half the time. And honestly, it's more than half the time. I mean, I don't see outside of Cooper and Zeke how you touch anybody else.
Yeah, Dak is the perfect example of a game manager, perfect example of he can rally his team together and get them to win. He does have a winning record in 3 years. He's just not a fantasy type quarterback. So having anybody except for Zeke and Cooper in that offense, I'm probably staying away from. Maybe Gallup in dynasty leagues and deep leagues. But other than that, I mean, with Witten coming back, you can pretty much guarantee that he's going to be there most likely in the red zone for red zone targets. So that's taken away 6 points each time from Cobb, for example, for getting fantasy points for you. So it's like, where are you getting those points from if you do have Cobb catches and over the middle stuff and yak, like Will mentioned? Other than that, I mean, he's a good player. He's definitely going to help Dallas out as a team, but I'm probably not touching him in fantasy. One more receiver before we move on to a couple other players. Adam Humphries. He decided to go to Tennessee over back to Tampa and over New England, which kind of shocks me. It seems like he's in it more for the money as opposed to winning, because if I had a contract offer from New England with Tom Brady still there, I'm probably signing there. But he goes to Tennessee. he's going to be the number two, looks like, behind Corey Davis. But he's shown last year playing with Fitz and with Jameis that he's pretty reliable. 76 catches on 105 targets, 5 touchdowns, over 800 yards, and kind of came out of nowhere. But Adam, you got thoughts on another Adam?
I personally like Adam Humphries. I mean, I took him last year. I took him and Godwin in the same draft, I think twice, just for some reason is if one of them didn't put up big numbers, I figured the other one was going to. And it worked out pretty well. I think he's going to fit right in there. I mean, one of the Marcus Mariota's biggest problems has been he really hasn't had a ton of help. Either, you know, the line's been banged up here and there, which has led to a ton of sacks, a ton of him running around for his life. And then he really never had a real good receiver. I mean, Corey Davis, his rookie year, I think he only played in a handful of games due to injury. He hasn't even had no tight end help. I mean, Delanie Walker missed, all of last year? If not, I think like 15 games or something last year. I expect this to be a year that they really, really, you know, Tennessee really tries to help him. You have Tannehill there too. If I'm looking at fantasy value for Corey Davis or Adam Humphries, I'm kind of hoping Tannehill somehow gets to be quarterback. I mean, more than likely it's going to be due to injury, but I think Tannehill, when it comes to getting the ball downfield, getting the ball to his bigger receivers, Tannehill, I think, has the edge there.
Yeah, Will, what do you got on Humphries?
Hey, man, Adam, I'm glad you said it because that's where I was going. I think they're in I think Marcus Mariota is going to be fighting for his job right here. Because Tannehill, I think, would move this ball a lot better than Mariota. Going back to Humphries, though, you know, with Mariota as quarterback and that type of offense as well, what a miserable landing spot.
I mean, that is true. They did, especially towards the end of the year, start to build a little bit of a run game. I know they brought in Deion Lewis or last offseason, and fantasy owners were kind of upset with Henry, but towards the end of the season, he kind of came along. And so hopefully that kind of opens things up for Mariota and that offense. I would definitely take a flyer on Humphries. He's, again, I mean, most of these receivers, actually all of these receivers that we talked about are kind of in that middle of the road, middle of the pack. They're not going to be your number one or most likely not even your number two guy on your fantasy team, but they could have some relevance there. Humphries, I think, probably is probably at the top of my list of the ones that we mentioned. He's probably got the most upside out of everybody. The only downside is, and it kind of goes back to all of them except for Funches, is the quarterback situation. Actually, Moncrief too, he does have Big Ben there, but he's with Mariota or Tannehill, you know they're going to want to try to give him the ball. He's been pretty consistent at least the last 3 years with receptions. He's at 76, 61, and 55. Hasn't really gotten to the end zone that much, but he could come down with the ball. He's pretty much your typical slot receiver. So we'll see what happens there. But just overall, I think going to Tampa was a good fit. Again, I'm surprised he chose Tampa over New England, but maybe he just wants to go be the guy there, even though they got Corey Davis. It's still kind of open for him.
Yeah, and he went to Tennessee. He left Tampa.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. He went – reading that wrong. He went to Tennessee, not Tampa. Moving on to a couple other guys. We have, a pair of former NFC South running backs. We'll start with Mark Ingram going out to Baltimore with the Ravens. Will, what are your thoughts on Ingram?
I think this is the perfect fit for the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, this is a guy who can pound the ball up the middle, but he can also catch passes. And I think that's what the Ravens have always wanted in a running back. They wanted one guy that could do that. Instead, they've had two or three guys that they were mixing together. Mark Ingram can do all of that. So this will lower the value of Edwards and Dixon, and I think Mark Ingram.
Top 15. That's a bold prediction. He is, with Alvin Kamara, he's kind of taking less of a beating on his body. He did miss those first four games last year due to suspension. So he's still kind of younger, so to speak, even though he is going to be turning 30. He's not a 30-year-old. He doesn't have a 30-year-old body running back. But he is – I agree with you. He went to a good situation with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. They want somebody that can do both, catch and run. I think Gus Edwards dynasty owners are kind of upset about it. I think Kenneth Dixon dynasty owners, all three of them that live in Baltimore are kind of upset about it. But just overall, I think Mark Ingram, he went to a good fit. He went somewhere. You either thought he was going back to New Orleans or he was going to go somewhere where he'd be the main guy. And he chose to go somewhere where he's the main guy, and Baltimore is a good spot for it. Adam, what do you got on him?
I mean, I agree with Will. I think he can potentially be a top 15 running back this year. The only thing that I think would prevent that is if Lamar Jackson can't take that next step forward as actually being a quarterback. I mean, yeah, he won games last year, put up, phenomenal performances. But if you look, he played more of a running back than he did a quarterback. And if that's going to be the case, and if they don't get help from the wide receiver position, teams are just going to stack that box against Ingram, and he ain't going to be able to do nothing about it.
No, and we'll see what happens there. Hopefully it all works out. I'm not a huge fan of Lamar Jackson. I don't think he has a long career in this league. Teams are starting to figure him out, but we'll see how he fares in year two. And he does have a running back to kind of help him out, so we'll see what happens there. On to the next guy. As we mentioned, another NFC South running back went from Atlanta. Now he's with the 49ers. I know Will's got some things to say about this one because he has all three 49ers running backs on his roster now. This guy is Tevin Coleman.
Mike Shanahan got somebody to play the Tevin Coleman role, and it's Tevin Coleman. I think McKinnon still has his starting position. I think Tevin Coleman comes in, does what he's always done. He hasn't proven to me that he can be an RB1 or a lead back by any means. I know many people will disagree with me, but I haven't seen it. So they have three or four of the same type of player out there.
There's been rumors that they're probably shopping one of them. It remains to be seen who it's going to be. I've seen Breida and I've seen McKinnon. So who knows what's true? Maybe something happens on draft day. Last year, leading up until last year and throughout the season, I was kind of hoping Coleman would end up here in Buffalo, but with the Freeman injury and Coleman kind of taking over, he didn't really show he could be that lead back, and that kind of upset me. I'm kind of glad that we did not get him. But I mean, out in San Francisco, they have Jimmy Garoppolo. They have those other two running backs that you mentioned. Maybe one of them's on their way out, but I think it's a good fit for him. I've already grabbed Coleman in a couple of leagues before I knew where he was going. So now I got to make some decisions on if I want to trade him away, if I could find a buyer for him, or if I'm just going to stick it out and see what he does in San Fran. But now that I have him, I'm hoping that he does okay. I hope he ends up being an RB1, but we'll see. Adam, what do you got on him?
I'm actually surprised that San Francisco signed him because, they signed Nathan McKinnon to a fairly big deal for a running back that never had to be the main guy, and paid him quite a bit of money and had a lost year. I mean, his first year, he tore his knee up and he couldn't play. And I was wondering, really, if they would just – they would go and see what he could do. I mean, if they trade him before he even plays an actual meaningful snap, it's kind of a waste, a wasteful signing. I know Tevin Coleman, I think we he had his opportunity this year to be the main guy in Atlanta. He couldn't quite do it. I mean, he still averaged 4 yards a carry, which for me, if I have a running back that's averaging 4 yards a carry, I'm not going to complain about that at all. But I think they can offer, in San Francisco, I think they can offer him some better protection than what he had in Atlanta. I do like their line just a little bit more. And Shanahan knows how to use him. And that's going to be a key. And I think that that's might have been why they threw the whole McKinnon signing out. There's no guarantee they've completely thrown out, but it looks like they're leaning that way. But Shanahan knew. He's like, I want my guy. I know how to use him. I know how to get the most out of his potential. And I'm kind of worried, though, because I do think once they trade one of their other running backs away, I think McKinnon's if it's McKinnon that gets traded, I do think that Coleman's price tag goes up a little bit, and it might be too rich for me.
Yeah, I could see if they do end up making a move, whether it's now or draft day or before training camp starts, where one of those running backs gets shipped out, then Coleman's stock definitely increases just based on you got to think that the volume is going to be there. But that remains to be seen. One more guy before we get into the break, and we won't spend a lot of time on this guy because we've talked about him a couple of different pods. The first pod when we talked about the quarterback carousel, and then last week when we talked about the actual signings, this guy is Nick Foles. It's finally become official. He's now a Jacksonville Jaguar, takes over for Blake Bortles, who ended up in LA backing up Jared Goff now. But Nick Foles, he was the number one quarterback on the market via trade or free agency. So how do we think he's going to do? Where do we see him? Are any of you drafting him in fantasy this year?
Yeah, I mean, I draft him. I'd draft him if I waited for a while on a quarterback, because I have had sometimes a waiting until about round like 9 or 10 before I grab my first quarterback. I'd pair him up with another maybe like a Stafford or a Josh Allen, someone I can get else I can pair with him in later rounds and play matchups for a while. But if Jacksonville goes and gets him a tight end or maybe even a receiver with a better skill set than what they currently have, I mean, he could end up potentially being a QB1 this year. I mean, granted, he's not elite, but I mean, somehow he figures how to get things done.
Will, do you have anything on Foles?
Well, I'm a big Nick Foles guy. Being out here in Arizona, you know, he went to the University of Arizona. I watched him put up his great season out there. And I think he's going to have a great season. Still worry a little bit about that Jags offensive line. You know, the thing that Bortles, if you saw him, it wasn't that he's just a bad quarterback. He is. But he also had to get out and run a lot, and he was able to do that. And that was because of the line. Nick Foles, not quite as mobile. So I'm interested to see if they can give him the protection. If they can give him protection, the sky's the limit for him. You know, and I would definitely draft him, like Adam said, in the later rounds. 9-10, pair him with another guy. You know, even maybe pick him up off the waiver wire if he starts playing well.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. He's definitely a guy that I would take later on. In all my drafts, I am a guy that takes my quarterback late. I typically end up with like your Matt Staffords, your Phillip Rivers. Just this past year, I ended up with Andrew Luck, actually in the 12th round, and that helped me a lot. I'm happy to see him get another chance to start. It just, the biggest thing is now, will Wentz stay healthy in Philadelphia? That remains to be seen. But we'll talk about that at a later day. So we're going to get into a quick commercial break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about players that were not on the move, but have increased roles and their draft stock definitely helped out because of either the additions or subtractions and they moved up. So we'll be back after this message and we'll talk those with you.
Do you need advice for your fantasy football team? How about your DraftKings or FanDuel lineup? Going4two.com has you covered. Going4two.com has exclusive content from some of the best fantasy writers in the industry, whose credentials include Bleacher Report, Fantasy Pros, and Fantasy Life. From advice columns to player ranks, Going4two.com has it all. Sign up for our newsletter to have all of our content sent to your inbox. Start winning today. Visit goingfortwo.com because no one remembers the extra point.
And we're back. And now we're going to talk about some guys that have had their fantasy draft stock increase. Some players that have definitely been helped out either with new players coming in or players being shipped out and now their role is increased. So Adam, why don't you start us off with Josh Allen?
Yeah, I think Josh Allen is one of the bigger winners here. For some reason, is they're getting him some wide receiver help in Cole Beasley and John Brown, who I think are going to be super beneficial for him. And then they're also making some moves on the offensive line, which is was a problem last year for you guys. I mean, granted, they're not signing any huge names, but yeah, I think there are a lot of minor pieces that they're adding there who knows, we could see something like a Seattle situation where you mix and match enough guys, something clicks, and it makes a decent enough piece to have your quarterback and your run game open up.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the kind of moves that we're making. We touched on it earlier about, yeah, signing all these players, it remains to be seen what's going to happen on the field. But as a Buffalo fan, I'm very excited. I'm very optimistic. We are now able to pick best player available in the draft and even trade back if we want. If I'm not going to get too in-depth about it. I was actually on a podcast with my buddy from Nickel City Sportscast the other day, and we went way in depth about the Buffalo Bills moves. We talked about a little bit about the draft, but mostly it was free agency. So if you want to check out my thoughts on that, listen to that. But what I will say is I'm very excited. Our line is pretty much 60% right now. It's kind of revamped. We picked up a tight end. We picked up those two wide receivers. We picked up Frank Gore. We picked up, and then on the defensive side of the ball, we've picked up a cornerback. And just now sitting at 9, and I mentioned this in the other podcast, we are in a prime position for at least 3 teams off the top of my head that I can think of that can move in and jump a 4th team that is in need of a quarterback. And that is Miami, the Giants at 17, if they don't take anybody at 6, and Washington. And that team that they could jump at 10 is Denver. So it's like, if we want to move back, we can. And I'm all for it if they want. If they want to grab the best player available, I'm all for that. But Josh Allen definitely gets a huge boost. He's going to be protected. He's got LeSean McCoy and Frank Gore in the backfield. They're probably going to draft one in the draft. John Brown, Zay Jones, Cole Beasley, Robert Foster are those household names? No, but it's definitely 2 of those guys that I mentioned are just revamped and given Josh Allen some weapons. He's one of the biggest winners, obviously.
Yeah, and I honestly didn't think about you guys potentially trading out of that 9 spot, but that makes perfect sense sitting there at 9, Denver sitting at 10. You know, there's been numerous rumors of Drew Locke basically is Elway's man, like Elway just loves him. And if somebody else views the number 3 quarterback as Drew Locke, you know, like a Miami, for instance, because there's a lot of smoke going around saying that they're going to wait the next year. They're going to, you know, they like Tua. So it's something to see. I mean, if you guys can get extra picks in a deep draft like this, I mean, why not?
Yeah, why not? That's exactly what I say. So 9 is a good spot for any team to kind of move up if they need to. I've already mentioned 3, but we'll see what happens. Speaking of Miami, they picked up a guy by the name of Ryan Fitzpatrick. That leads me into another guy, Chris Godwin, because Fitzpatrick was with Tampa last year. You see what I did there? Chris Godwin kind of is a winner now with Adam Humphries leaving on the other side of Mike Evans. Let's talk about him a little bit. Why is he a winner to you?
Well, now he'll have one-on-one coverage against him probably 99.9% of the snaps. Just for some reason, this team's a double team Mike Evans. You have Bruce Arians going there, who I think is going to maybe not turn Jameis Winston into a superstar or some, you know, an elite quarterback, but I think we'll see a big step in the right direction for Jameis this year. And that's going to benefit Godwin, I think, more than anybody else in that offense. I mean, no matter who was playing quarterback, no matter how good they were playing quarterback, Mike Evans got his producing for the most part. And we've seen it this year with the iffy quarterback play. I mean, Fitzpatrick had some good games here and there. Winston was okay some games, if you want to say that. But Godwin found a way to still do something. And that's with Humphreys, you know, honestly stealing a lot of the touches, because everybody viewed him and Humphreys like basically being eye level this year coming in. And we seen it, you know, it seemed like every other week one of those guys was the big baller besides Mike Evans. And then the following week, it was the guy that had, you know, that was left behind that weekend. Just it kept going. And now that he has basically that number 2 spot locked down, because there's nobody on that roster that's going to challenge him for that spot right now, it's, man, I'm excited. I'm going to probably reach for him a little bit, just for a simple factor. I think he's going to hit that 1,000-yard mark, a little bit more than a handful of touchdowns. But in dynasties, like in our dynasty league for the fantasy football fraternity page, I actually drafted him his rookie year, and I kept him when we had our expansion draft when we added two more teams in. I kept him because there I knew he was gonna he if I didn't protect him I knew he wasn't gonna be there for me.
Yeah, I was not on the Chris Godwin hype train last year. I was kind of late to the party, so by the time I was really kind of into it or into him and kind of interested in like what he was doing, he was pretty much grabbed in a lot of my leagues, so I did not have the opportunity to take him. I'm going to kind of piggyback off of you, but instead of saying that Chris Godwin is a big winner there, I'm going to go ahead and say O.J. Howard is a big winner there, because with Humphreys leaving, and as long as Howard comes back healthy, he could be a top tight end in this league. He's going to be that middle of the field kind of guy. He is a possession tight end. We have Bruce Arians coming in as the coach there. He is a pass heavy coach. He's going to get the most out of Jameis Winston. I could definitely see Godwin having a big year, being the number two, but O.J. Howard over the middle is I think that's a perfect scenario for him. Basically coming in, and you mentioned that Godwin's probably going to be the number two target. I think it's going to be O.J. Howard actually.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be interesting to see because, you know, you have Cameron Brate there too, who you can tell they have a lot of faith in because I think it was last offseason, if not the offseason before, they gave him a you know, fairly sized contract to stay there, even though they had Howard. But if anybody can make, honestly, all four of these guys, Evans, Godwin, Brate, and O.J. Howard into something this year, it's going to be Bruce Arians. I mean, he's probably going to have, you know, Jameis be one of them. Like I personally, you know, especially due to the lack of run game, Jameis is probably going to throw the ball probably in the top five compared to, you know, when it comes to all the quarterbacks. And if Bruce Arians can get Jameis to click a little bit, I mean, these four guys, I'd probably take, you know, we all know we take Evans no matter who's the coaches, but I'd take the other three guys too this year.
Yeah. And just kind of feeding off of what we were talking about earlier, we mentioned how the Bills were probably going to be playing from a lot behind a lot. We mentioned how the Giants are probably going to be playing from behind a lot. Tampa's another team that's probably going to be playing from behind a lot, but Tampa actually has the weapons and the offense of players that I'm probably going to want on my team. Obviously Mike Evans is a borderline first round pick. If he falls at the second and I'm there in the early second, I'm taking him. Godwin, I would grab any one of those four guys in any of my drafts, and then also kind of double up with Jameis Winston, maybe get a quarterback and pass catching target combo if I could. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen there. I know they lost some key players on defense, but so that's they're probably going to be playing from behind a lot, especially being in a division with Atlanta and New Orleans. It's going to be pretty interesting to see. Let's move on to our third winner, and these are not in any specific order, but we'll talk about your boy now, Matt Stafford. What makes him a winner to you?
Well, they've done this before, but they're trying to help him a lot. I mean, they're trying to – our main goal is in Detroit is to win a Super Bowl with Stafford. We feel – and management has said this numerous times – we feel like he's the guy that can get us there. But Stafford, as much as I hate to say it, he's one of the guys that needs the talent around him, more of him being the guy that could basically be like Brady, get talent out of, you know, guys who aren't supposed to be in this league. Really, I mean, if you put Chris Hogan on a team, is Chris Hogan really going to do something with maybe, say, Winston with Stafford? I don't know. Brady can do that. Stafford needs help. I mean, Danny Amendola, granted, he has some, you know, drop problems, but he's going to fill that Golden Tate role, which anybody that's seen a Detroit game with Golden Tate and without, once we lost Golden Tate, we didn't know how to make that offense move. Amendola is, I think, he's not going to come anywhere close, I think, Golden Tate type production, the 90 catches, 1,000 yards, but he'll be the guy Stafford look for when it's, you know, third and short, and we're not running the ball, or if it's, you know, first and 15 or whatever, because Amendola can go catch a little bubble screen and turning into something. And then we signed Jesse James. I think he's going to be what we wanted Ebron to be. He's a big boy. He's like 6'7". Stafford is going to look for him in the end zone, you know, or even the red zone, you know, 20, 25 years out. He's going to look for him a ton. If anybody has the most touchdowns on that team, I think it's going to end up being just Jesse James. I wouldn't be surprised if he hit double-digit touchdowns. Just for some reason is Stafford's loves them big targets. I mean, you have Galladay there. It's going to be a good time for, I think, all Lions fans. I think we're going to finally start getting out of that rut into offense because it seems like every time our defense is good, our offense isn't. Every time our offense is good, our defense isn't. But now I think we're super, super close to building a complete team, and that benefits Stafford.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what Detroit's got going on there. Obviously, you guys haven't really made a lot of free agent moves this year, but the ones that you have made are huge. From the four that I could think of, Justin Coleman, Trey Flowers, Jesse James, and Danny Amendola. Amendola is probably, and I'll put it in quotes, the worst move of the four, but that's not saying anything bad. That's just saying that those four moves are really good. Matt Patricia going into a second year, he is a defensive guy. So with the offense that you guys got, I think that offense is going to click very nicely. Marvin Jones should be coming back from injury. Kenny Galladay has kind of played his way into a number one receiver role and a guy that could be taken. And some people might take him in the first. I won't, but even as high as in the second and the third round, he's one of those late wide receiver ones in the second round. Jesse James, he's another guy that I wanted here in Buffalo, but I did not want to pay him what top tight end was going to be paid. I'm kind of happy that we ended up getting Tyler Croft, but if we were to get Jesse James, I would not be mad about that. So I'm excited to see what's going on in Detroit. You guys do have to play in Chicago and in now the revamped Green Bay defense. And Minnesota's always been a pretty good defense, so definitely need to build an offense that's going to compete with them, and I think that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, and it's the offensive moves outside of James has been Amendola, who it's not a splashy move. Like you said, out of the four, it's the worst move, but we're not signing guys just because of the big name. We're actually filling the holes that we have on our roster. And like, as soon as we get, you know, as soon as everybody was signing, it's like, okay, any Lions fan knew exactly what they were doing. Trey Flowers, we needed the upgrade again, you know, from Ansa because he can't stay on the field. Made Justin Coleman the highest paid nickel or slot corner in the league because he's one of the, if not the best slot corner right now. And then Amendola. All right, how do we make this offense move when we can't get it deep to our big guys? Oh, well, we traded Tate. All of a sudden, we're stuttering. Amendola's going to slide right in there, play the Tate role, hopefully move that defense or, you know, move the offense and, you know, open up the deeper part of the field for Galladay and Jones and Jesse James. And they were, even though it was a lot of money, it was smart money, though.
Yeah, definitely. Another guy that we have as a winner here, we touched on his team a little earlier. He was actually the first his team was the first player that we mentioned with Le'Veon Bell. That's going to be Sam Darnold in the Jets. Obviously, with them going out and grabbing the number one offensive prize on the market, they brought in Jamison Crowder. They did, like I said, they missed out on Matt Paradis at the center position, but they did make a couple moves on the offensive line. They have Robbie Anderson, Quincy Enunwa, and Christopher Herndon, who was a kind of came on a little bit as a tight end last year. And so, like, overall, that offense seems to be kind of being put together. They're making huge moves on defense, spending a lot of money this year. But they had a lot of money going into free agency. But Sam Darnold is definitely going to be he's one of our top winners that we got. I've said my piece about him. What do you got on him?
Well, I think he's a guy that's draftable now. From a talent standpoint, I don't think Darnold, no matter who he has around him, will ever be the top 5, top 10, not only think really top 15 fantasy quarterback. But I think he's someone that you can pick up. You can put him in, you know, for your bye week, for your main quarterback. If you know, something did happen to your QB1, slide him in there for, you know, the 2-3 weeks if it's a minor injury. And I think he can keep you in your, you know, week in and week out, he'll keep you into your matchups. And that the Le'Veon Bell signing was just huge. I mean, even, you know, you take away the Crowder signing, that's just huge. I mean, you're looking at extra 500-600, you know, pass yards just to Bell alone. You're looking at probably at least a handful of passing touchdowns to, you know, Le'Veon Bell alone. And it's gonna be super beneficial for him. And plus, people, you know, now you have teams that they have to respect your run game. You have Le'Veon Bell. It's not like you can just, you know, all right, we can just sit back and worry about Darnold. It's like, no, you have to respect the run game now. And I could take one very notable play from his very first pass. I mean, his very first game, which was his very first pass in Detroit. I was there live. And Darnold was running for his life. And Detroit didn't even really worry about any of the running backs. I mean, they were completely ready for his first play to be a pass and end up taking, you know, a pick six to the house. And now, you know, Detroit, the Patriots, other teams can't do that now. You have to have at least, you know, one or two guys focusing on, all right, if Bell touches that ball, we have to get there as soon as possible.
Yeah, he's going to show some huge improvements this year. He doesn't, like, just by himself, he does not scare me as a quarterback. He's not really a, as long as we can contain him or any team can contain him, I think that they could have some success against him. But now that he has those weapons, he can hit Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield. Even Elijah McGuire, when he's on the field, he can make some things happen. So he does have some weapons, so he is definitely definitely fantasy worthy now. This year, he's a guy that kind of goes in the Nick Foles category. Pick him late if you're a guy that doesn't like to draft your quarterbacks early. Sam Darnold should be there. He's 100% should be drafted in two quarterback and super flex leagues, and even played on a consistent basis because he does have, there's no reason for him not to succeed because he does have those weapons. And our final guy that we have is a guy that is a perennial first-round fantasy pick, but he's missed a lot of time due to injuries. We talked about his quarterback earlier today, and that's Nick Foles. So the player that we're talking about is Leonard Fournette. Adam, what do we have to say about him?
It goes back to Darnold improving because of Le'Veon Bell. The same situation, but the roles are swapped. It's having Nick Foles now, who is a huge upgrade to me over Blake Bortles, teams aren't going to stack the box now against Leonard Fournette. So he'll have a little bit more room to run. Now, you know, there's still probably going to, you know, a defense comes in, their number one thing is still going to be to stop Fournette, but now you can't stack the box. And now they don't have to worry about feeding, you know, with the health issues. They don't have to worry about feeding, you know, Leonard Fournette now 25 times or whatever because they have no other options. I mean, because you didn't want Blake Bortles throwing the ball 30 times because who knew how many interceptions he was going to throw or how many just boneheaded plays he's going to make. Foles, you can go and throw 25, 30 times a game. He's a lot smarter quarterback. He won't make those mental mistakes. He's a lot better at reading teams. So I expect if, you know, they're up to line and he sees that, you know, Leonard Fournette has a potential opening, he'll switch the play up. Or if he, you know, if the original play is a run play and he goes, oh, well, you know, the defense knows what's going to happen right now. They're going to stop Fournette. He'll switch it up and get a pass play and get in there or throw the other defenses, you know, throw the defenses off. And yeah, I think this is going to just help Leonard Fournette overall with his health. Game flow, I think, is going to move a lot better than what it has underneath Bortles. And I don't know if I take Fournette round once now, just for some reason is he does have those health concerns. You know, is it because he was getting the ball too much or is it because he's just brittle? We don't know that yet. That is something I think we will see this year. You know, that answer will come to us. But if he's there in the middle of round two, you know, and I think there's some times he might slide to somebody in round three, I take him just, you know, off of the potential alone.
Yeah, if he's making a round two, I think I would grab him. During the last few weeks of last year and any game that he's missed, I think I would swearing in our chat that I'm never touching Leonard Fournette again. But obviously, some circumstances change. If he's there at the end of round two, getting into round three, then there's no reason why you're not taking him. That's pretty much his biggest thing. We talked about it with Randall Cobb. We're going to talk about it with Leonard Fournette. He needs to stay on the field. He's one of those dynamic players that when he's healthy, he's a top player in this league. Same thing with your Tyler Eifert's. Same thing with your Keenan Allen's. Their health history, their injury history is the reason why people tend to stray away from them. But he's one of the best running backs in the game when he's on the field helping out his team. And he's definitely going to get a huge boost with Nick Foles there in the backfield. They do have some pretty solid receivers on the outside that could kind of help out too. I know they lost Hearns and Allen Robinson the year before last. And then they have Marcus Lee now, who's supposed to be a pretty good receiver. But I think with Nick Foles there, he kind of opened it up. But Fournette he's a guy that you want on your team as long as he's healthy. He has missed, looks like, 8-3. So he's missed 11 games in 2 years, which is kind of bad numbers. But when on the field, he's shown that he's a top guy. And with Nick Foles there, he's going to be even better.
Yeah, and look at this way. Every year that he gets hurt and misses games, there's a good chance that you're going to get a healthy season pretty soon. So, I mean, and there's a lot of, you know, quite not a lot, but there's quite a few players that start their careers with some injuries and then all of a sudden good health and look what happens. I mean, hate to go back to my home team, but I know it so well. Is when we first drafted Stafford, I mean, I was just getting into the whole draft thing and deep into football. I was only a teenager, but it's like Stafford, I think his rookie year, I think he missed 6 games. And then the following year, he ended up tearing his ACL and he was out, I think, the next 14 games. And everybody was so worried. I remember everybody in Detroit was so worried about, do we sign a backup to, you know, to just in case, or do we draft another guy to potentially, you know, see what he can do and just give up on the whole Stafford situation. And then all of a sudden he stayed healthy. We made the playoffs, even though it was only a couple times, but we got what we wanted, you know, stat wise. And I think that could happen to Fournette. I mean, if he's healthy this year and you draft him around 2 or 3, I'm willing to say you got a top 5 talent if he plays 16 games.
Definitely. There's one more guy that I want to talk about. Two big pieces of news and information and transactions came within the past week that kind of brought him to the top of my list. One was a suspension has been brought upon. That's going to be only 8 games. And the other is going out and trading for a top receiver in this league and Odell Beckham. And that player that I want to talk about is Baker Mayfield. I think he is the biggest winner of this year with that offense around him. They already had Jarvis Landry. They have another could be top tight end with the right targets and the right play calls in David Njoku. Nick Chubb is there. Kareem Hunt is the player I mentioned that we finally found out his suspension is going to be 8 games. So when he comes back in week 9 or 10, if their bye week is in week 9, it's going to be huge. Baker Mayfield he's got to be at the top of the list for winners this year. What do you think about him?
He's the biggest winner that I don't want to touch though. I mean, his price tag's going to be through the roof. I mean, and I want him on my team so bad just for some reason is he's going to blow up. I mean, he is going to blow up and we're going to go back, I think, with him. I remember when I first started playing fantasy football, Drew Brees and Peyton Manning were being drafted in the end of the second and third rounds. I mean, he's set up for that. I mean, he's talented. There's no weak link on that offense now. You know, when it comes to position, you know, skilled players, there's no weak link. I mean, he has 3 running backs that can help him all the way from Chubb all the way to Johnson. You have, you know, and people are talking, they're not even talking about Antonio Callaway now. People got to remember when Antonio Callaway came in the league, if it wasn't for his off the field concerns, he probably would have been a top 2 or 3 round pick, more than leaning towards that top 2 rounds. I mean, he's super talented and we've seen the glimpse of the talent he can show, but it's like, do you really want to go and grab Baker with Patrick Mahomes or, you know, one of those top three quarterbacks? Like, do you even want to take him where you used to, where people used to take Aaron Rodgers? I mean, Aaron Rodgers used to go round 3, 4 with some bold guys, you know, drafting him to end of round 2. And that's going to be Baker's price this year. And if he does what everybody thinks he's going to do, that's going to be his price for the next several years.
Yeah, that's exactly my thoughts. He is – the only reason I don't think I'm going to be able to get Baker Mayfield is because I'm not drafting him as high as he's going to go. And that's – he's basically the Todd Gurley of last year, where the only reason you weren't getting Todd Gurley is because you didn't have the number one pick. The only reason you're not getting Baker Mayfield is because you're not taking him in the second and third round. And I mean, if you want him, you're going to have to draft him early. There's no doubt about it. And he's going to put up numbers that, that you're going to want in your fantasy quarterback, but the smart fantasy players don't draft quarterbacks early. So you're not going to be grabbing them. It's basically just as simple as that. I'd love to have him on my team. Maybe I'll trade for him, but he's going to demand a high price tag via trade and in the draft. Let's just go over a couple of news and notes. I'm going to run through them. If you want to touch on any of them, let me know at the end of it. If not, then we'll close out the show. But Clay Matthews is going to be headed to the LA Rams, signed a deal today. I believe it was for 2 years. Vontaze Burfict was released by the Bengals, and he is now going to be with the Raiders. I find that interesting because he's going to be now in the same locker room as Antonio Brown. There's been some heated battles there with the Bengals and the Steelers in recent years, so remains to be seen what's going to happen there. Cowboys are looking at trading for Robert Quinn, possibly. We could see him on the move. Things are just blowing up in Miami with the trade of Tannehill and them not doing much in free agency and just picking up Ryan Fitzpatrick in a year where you think that they want to tank, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is good enough to win you 6-7 games, so who knows what's going on there. So just a couple of big news things going on. Anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, my biggest thing is knowing how Antonio Brown is. We've seen the, you know, we've heard the stuff he said about Big Ben and a couple others. I don't know if that's going to work out with him and Burfict being there just for some reason. This isn't like some petty stuff that, oh, well, you know, he was holding me and then we just start, you know, jibber jabbering back and forth. It's like he's literally, you know, Burfict has literally laid Antonio Brown out. And this isn't boxing. This is football. And he's literally just laid him out. So I don't know. Antonio Brown likes to run the mouth a little bit. We know Burfict does the same thing. So I just hope they have their lockers on the opposite side of the room.
And I just want to check one thing real quick. It looks like that the Raiders are going to be playing in New York this year. That's going to be interesting because Burfict has had some back and forth with Le'Veon Bell. So I'm either hoping that that's a primetime game or a game that they either flex into a primetime schedule or even just a game that's going to be on local television just to kind of see what's going on there. I mean, it's not as big as the Antonio Brown stuff. It's not as big as the Juju stuff, and they don't play in Pittsburgh or Pittsburgh doesn't go to Oakland this year. But just seeing, obviously the schedule's not out, but seeing that they're going to be in New York to play the Jets, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and also we have to see if Burfict makes it that far. If it's a game later in the year, just for some reason, is suspensions, you know, health. He doesn't really play a full 16 games now. So if that game's more towards the end of the year, it might not have to be something we even need to think about.
Yeah, exactly. Any final thoughts? Any last words?
Well, one thing I do want to say is for all the baseball fans, Mike Trout is going to be a lifelong angel. Signed a 12-year deal for over $430 million, by far the biggest contract in sports history. So congrats to Mike Trout. Congrats to the Angels for keeping your star player. Hopefully you guys can win with, you know, build around him and win something.
Yeah, I'm not a baseball fan at all, but I've definitely seen that a lot of money has been spent, especially this offseason. And just every year it just seems like he keeps on getting bigger and bigger. But if they got the money to do it, then do it. I really don't know the ins and outs of any kind of cap or if there is a cap in baseball or what's going on. So, but congratulations to Mike Trout. I guess he's set for life, and his great-great-grandchildren are set for life now, too. I want to give a shout-out to the UB Bulls basketball team. They're going to be coming in or playing as a sixth seed in the tournament out of the West region. They play the winner of the Arizona State play-in game tomorrow night, I believe it is. They play on Friday at about 6 o'clock. So I'm excited to see them, how they progress. That's, they've been exciting to watch all season. My heart says that they have the potential to win it all. My brain says that they'll probably make it to the third round at least. Hopefully they could get out of the 64 and out of the 32, make it to the Sweet 16, but we'll see what happens. I know you're not a huge NCAA fan, but you're going to be rooting for Michigan State. Anything you want to say about them?
I did a couple mocks or a couple brackets just because, you know, free to enter, you can win stuff. I do have Buffalo going to the Sweet 16, if I'm not mistaken. And I also have Michigan State winning one of my brackets and then getting beat by Duke, if I'm not mistaken, in another. So good luck to them. Michigan State's been one of the richest teams in college basketball for the last numerous years. You know, going back always since the Mateen Cleaves. So good luck to anybody. I mean, honestly, even though as much as I want Michigan State to win just because that's my state's team, you know, there's Michigan, but you have everything divided. I'm Michigan State for everything. I'm hoping one day we get a Cinderella story, like a true Cinderella story, a number, you know, 14 seed or 16 seed just goes all the way.
Yeah, that'll be fun to watch. And I'm going to be more invested this year because of UB and their potential. But it's going to be fun to watch. I'll be watching. I watched a couple of the games today, and even the NIT tournament, I think, kicked off today and was jumping back and forth with them. But it's a filler until the rest of the NFL stuff starts. So we're going to close it out with that. We want to give a huge shout out to Jeff Lambert and Going for Two. I want to shout out my buddy over at Nickel City Sportscast and Sports Talk Buffalo, putting out podcasts on a weekly basis. Nickel City Sportscast first podcast is out now. He's on Spotify. He's on Anchor. He's on Apple Podcasts. He's on Google Podcasts. We talked about the Buffalo Bills free agent moves this past week. So definitely check that out. Going for Two and Jeff Lambert, they do awesome work over there. He's putting out different articles every day. He's got different draft prospects. And speaking of draft prospects, check us out at Fantasy Football Fraternity. We got two guys, Cole and Braden, that do awesome work with their draft prospects, putting out Monday through Friday daily prospects in depth. So you kind of get to learn about the players before your actual fantasy drafts and the real draft coming up next month. Adam, any last words?
No, just stay tuned for everything. We will be booking some more prospects on within the next few weeks before the draft. So stay tuned for that. And I will be on Jeff's Going for Two pod probably within the second week of April. We're doing a live first round mock draft. I am covering the Giants, the Lions, the Dolphins, the Steelers, and the Chargers in that first round mock. So any suggestions, please leave comments too. That will be live. So this isn't planned or nothing. One of my potential picks could get stolen right before I take them. So it'll be interesting to see.
And last but not least, we've had some connection issues earlier with Will from Fantasy Football Fraternity. We do want to apologize for any of those connection issues, but we do want to thank him for coming on. He'll be on a lot more. He's part of our group. He talks good football. He'll give us sort of the NFC South side of things or NFC West side of things with him being an Arizona fan. But we'll have him on again. So thank you guys for tuning in.